listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams and macros or anything else. Stop counting numbers. Stop counting the number on the scale. Stop watching your weight. Nothing to do with numbers, because if you want to get to a healthy weight and get on with your life, you got to figure out what is eating at you. And that is what I am here to help you to do. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you. Because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is, again, what is eating at you. It's not what you're eating, it's why. If you would like to join and talk with me today, the number here is 323-203-0815. Give me a call. Let me know what is going on with you. And I have some stuff to share with you today. So I was reading this parenting article and I thought, wow, this is a great article for not just parents, but humans, because we all need to learn to parent ourselves in a kinder, gentler way. And the article is called, "These Three Little Words Are Making You a Negative Person," and you probably say them all the time. Here's something that'll make you think twice. The majority of American conversations are characterized by a complaint. This, according to Scott B., a psychologist, Dr. Scott B., a psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic. The article by Cassie Shortsleeve, she goes on to say, it makes sense. Human brains have what's called a negative bias. We tend to notice things that are threatening in our condition, and it goes back to our ancestors when being able to spot threats was crucial. That's why we tend to find patterns, right? We say, just the other day, someone said, oh, well, things have been going too well. Now I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. As if there's a pattern. Things go well, then something bad happens. And this originates from when we needed to see a pattern. We needed to discern that those footprints in the ground belong to a big, scary animal that's going to eat you. And now that which helped us survive creates these connections and these correlations and this causality of a pattern that doesn't exist. Good things do not lead to bad things any more than bad things lead to good things. We don't like to realize that we live in a somewhat random universe where bad things can happen out of the blue, totally out of the blue, as we've all just seen from the pandemic, or on a more personal level, that bad things can happen to us. We get in our car, we go to the store, and someone rear-ends us. Nothing we can do about it. And we don't like to think that way. We like to think, oh, I saw it coming. All that good stuff was happening. That's why I got rear-ended, right? The universe is balancing the books. All it does is create stress, and stress creates discomfort, and discomfort creates going to food to cope, escape, numb, comfort. Back to the article. Before you say you really try not to complain, you meditate, you think positively, you always try to find the good. You're likely more guilty than you think, says the author. After all, when was the last time you said that you had to do something? Maybe you had to go grocery shopping, or you had to work out. Maybe you had to go to your in-laws after work. It's an easy trap we all fall into from time to time, but it's one that can not only make our perspectives on life a little more blue, but also likely negatively impact brain chemistry. How about that? Fortunately, there is hope. Fortunately, a tiny language tweak can help. So instead of saying, I have to, say this, I get to. I get to. What a difference. What a shift, right? I have to do that. I get to do that. Here's why it works. I have to sounds like a burden. I get to is an opportunity. And our brains respond powerfully to the way we use language when we talk and the way we use language in our thoughts, our minds and our brains, I should say, actually. After all, while saying you have to do something will likely help you do it, you will make it to that spin class or whatever, framing the behavior as something you get to do. I get to go to spin class. I get to go to the gym. I get to go on that walk. I get to use my mirror. I love my mirror so much. Oh, love it, love it, love it. Anyway, and by mirror, I mean the workout mirror, not just a mirror into which I gaze. No, the mirror, the workout mirror where you get all these classes. And I'm by the way, I don't work for the mirror. The mirror has not given me money to say anything good about it, but it's a great way to get a workout from home. Framing the behavior as something you get to do helps you lean into it and helps you appreciate the fact that you're able to do it in the first place. It brings a sense of opportunity and a welcoming of the experience, which has a positive benefit for us. It's the difference between a threat and a challenge. Very few people are up for a good threat, that's for sure. And most of us are up for a good challenge or opportunity. So if you say, well, I get to eat right today. I get to make healthy choices for myself. I get to feel good today, not I have to eat right. I have to go on that walk, right? What a simple semantic shift and what an amazing difference that makes. So give it a try. Let me know what you think. And me, my work, and the show. And if you're not, you're about to be, I think language is really important. The way we speak to ourselves and about ourselves makes all the difference in the world. If we call ourselves names, if we say, oh, you have no willpower. Why did you eat those cookies? What's wrong with you? Well, you're going to feel terrible because you've just made yourself feel terrible. And then you're even more likely to have more cookies to feel better. But when you are supportive of yourself and when you say, okay, let me be curious, not critical. What was going on with me? Why did I eat those cookies? Was I hungry? Was it physical hunger? Was it emotional hunger? If it's emotional hunger, what's going on with me? What do I really need? And when you can ask yourself that question, then you can give yourself what you really need, which is probably not cookies, most definitely not cookies, but maybe some support, some understanding, some encouragement. Words are so vital. Words are so important because when we speak words to ourselves, we're listening. And as you just saw in that example, the difference between saying, I have to do something and I get to do something. It's a big difference. A tiny three-letter word, had to get. I get to, makes a big difference. So I want to share again my word diet. No, I don't believe in diets. I know. I'm starting the anti-diet, post-diet revolution because diets just make you feel bad. They work maybe temporarily, but they're unsustainable. And the anticipation of deprivation and the experience of deprivation will only make you want something more. So if I tell you, hey, you cannot have, it's a cookie day, so I'm going to keep going with cookies. You can't have cookies until you lose X number of pounds. What are you going to want? You're going to want cookies. And then you're going to say, well, I can't have them again until I lose X pounds. So I better have a bunch of them now. I better have more cookies now because I am anticipating I will not be able to have cookies for some time. And that leads to that Last Supper scenario where you eat way too much on Sunday because you're going to start the diet on Monday. And then the diet, of course, is unsustainable. And so, you end up in that diet binge cycle, which only causes weight gain, which only causes heartache, total heartache. So instead, forget the dieting. Learn how to identify why you're eating instead of focusing on what you're eating. And if you're going to go on a diet, I suggest the only diet you go on is this word diet. So reading from my book, the way you talk about yourself, the way you talk about your body affects the way you feel about yourself. When you're mean to yourself, you feel bad. When you feel bad, you eat for comfort. Losing weight takes time. But you know what? You can drop the fat talk right this minute. You can make an important change right this minute. And so here are some of the words that I say you should eliminate from your diet. The word diet. So the first one is fat. Fat. You aren't fat. You have fat. You also have fingernails. You are not fingernails. Would finding why I'm eating help me not eat? Ask someone. Yes, exactly. If you are just eating and focusing on the food and going, why am I eating those cookies? I shouldn't eat those cookies. What's wrong with me? You're not figuring out why you're eating. Now, what is going on with you? Maybe you're eating for comfort. That means you need to comfort yourself in a different way. If you have kids or if you have friends or if you have someone you love and they need comfort, are you going to say, hey, I have a great idea. You feel bad. I know just what to do. Eat this. I don't think so. So understanding why you are being motivated to eat whatever it is that you're eating helps you out quick to turning to food to resolve what's going on inside that sometimes we don't even know. We don't even know what's actually eating at us, which is why I created my food mood formula. Really briefly, if you find yourself turning to ice cream or smooth, creamy foods, that means you need comfort. If you are eating something crunchy, pretzels, chips, anything with a crunch, with a bite, that indicates that you have some angry feelings you need to express, only not to yourself because of what you're eating, and not maybe to the person you're mad at, but it has to come out. You have to express it in words. Write it in a journal. Call a friend. Go, but mostly say it with words. And if you are eating things that like are bulky and take up space within you, such as bread, cake, muffins, pizza, pasta, anything that's kind of big and takes up space, that is associated with filling a void. And if those are your go-to foods, you want to look at, well, where in your life do you have a void? Where in your life is there something missing? And if that's what it is, you got to figure out a way to fill that void. If you are lonely, to do two things, actually, if you're lonely. One is connect with other people. Another way to deal with loneliness is to create a presence of a supportive part of you. Turn loneliness into solitude. Loneliness feels terrible. It's the heartache of loneliness. Loneliness is unbearable. But when you are there for yourself and with yourself in a supportive way, in an encouraging way, that loneliness turns more into solitude, which is bearable. And so to answer your question, yes, figuring out why you are eating is essential, because then you can give yourself what you really need. You can respond to yourself with what you really, truly need. So I hope that answers the question. Feria? I don't want to even attempt to say your name wrong. But then when you deal with the true need, you don't use food anymore. Because when you comfort yourself, support yourself, are kind to yourself, make yourself feel better with words, you don't need to eat. It sounds so simple. It is not as simple as it sounds. It takes practice. But like anything, at first you've got to think a lot about it. It's like learning to play the piano or learning to play any kind of musical instrument. At first you've got to really think, okay, what finger goes with what key and what am I doing and how does this work? And you're in your head, really in your mind, thinking and thinking and thinking. And eventually you just know. You don't have to think about it. You know. You just sit down, you play something on the piano. So it is with this. At first, you've got to think a lot. Okay, why am I eating that? What's eating at me? What do I really need? What's going on? This feels weird. This is difficult. Eventually, it becomes second nature. But you just need to start and you just need to practice. And remember, it's like running a marathon. When you run a marathon, you decide you're going to run a marathon. Nobody just says, I'm going to run a marathon. And then they go and oh, Josh is calling. Okay. Oh, I said your name perfectly. Oh, yay. Josh, hold on. I just want to finish my marathon analogy. When you go to run a marathon, you don't just get up and run 26 miles. You run 1 mile and then 2 miles. And along the way, you say, good for me. I ran 1 mile. I ran 2 miles. You don't say, oh, 24 more miles. I didn't run 24 miles. You say, oh, God, good for me. I did this. Any kind of change is like learning to run a marathon. You do a little bit, then a little bit more, and a little bit more. And you're consistent and persistent. And eventually, guess what? You run the marathon. Hello, Josh. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Nina. My question today is about anxiety or fear. And I've been feeling some social anxiety. I'm getting a haircut. I haven't gotten a haircut probably since the beginning of the pandemic. And I'm sort of scared to go. It's not because of I'm afraid I'm going to get COVID. It's just, I'm sort of afraid to be in that kind of environment.
Okay. So you're not afraid to get COVID. What is it about the environment that feels anxiety producing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I want to try to tie it into food because I feel like eating is a way out from anxiety too. I mean, for me, the best thing that food can do is not to cure sadness, but it's to cure anxiety. Like, I feel like
yes.
That, if I'm using food, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, food can be the response to anxiety, sadness, fear, even whatever it is, anger, whatever it is, all emotional states can be met with food if you don't know how to respond otherwise. Also with anxiety, I just want to make the point that often people eat to calm their bodies. Like it has that sedative effect. So food is the solution to the anxiety, but what is the cause of the anxiety? What comes to mind when you think about going to get your hair cut?
Well, I'm not even there yet. I feel like maybe I should be eating on the way or eat there. Or that's not the right idea, I guess. But
no, let's dig a little deeper. When you think about getting in your car, are you getting in your car? Are you driving to get your haircut?
No, I'm not. I'm walking,
walked
by there because I knew it would be a problem. I knew I would be scared. It's tomorrow. So I kind of walked by there just to see how I felt. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so if you think about walking out of your place to go to the hair salon or place tomorrow, or I guess, well, you're a guy, barbershop, I don't know, the hair cutting place, what is your thought and what is your emotion?
Well, part of it is what you said. I mean, I'm a guy going to a hair salon. I mean, this is what I'm trying to do. My hair is so long that I feel like I need to have, and it's a friend who's cutting it. So I really shouldn't be scared. She's been my hair cutter now for years, but I haven't seen her since really the beginning of the pandemic. I'm afraid that I'm going to embarrass her. I'm afraid that I'm going to like embarrass her. And
why
it's really
would you
strange.
Embarrass her? Why? Okay, so why would you embarrass her?
I don't know. I don't know, because I'm a guy. I'm going to hair. I have no idea. I'm not sure.
Is this someplace you've never been before?
I have been there, but she just got a new job there. And so I'm going to see her for her first. She just started working there. So I'm like, the last thing I want to do is embarrass her at the place that she just started working at.
What's embarrassing? I want to ask you two questions. One, what is embarrassing about what you said? I don't know very quickly, but what would be embarrassing?
I actually don't know. I think that might be the neurotic part of me, in the sense that, there is no good reason. Is that
okay?
Sorry.
Josh, don't go to that's the neurotic part of me. That doesn't help. Let's be curious. That's the neurotic part of me is a little on the curious side, and we want to stay on the curious side. Curious, not critical. Is this a feeling that is at all familiar, this anxiety?
Yes. I feel like food could cure it, but that's all I have to give you. It's terrible.
Before we food can cure it, before we go to food can cure it, what is familiar about this feeling? What can you remember a similar feeling and tie it to a memory?
Yeah, I feel like if it was going to come from my childhood, I would say I was probably anxious, maybe about not receiving the love that I was going to get. And so I just sort of ate and was quiet. And then, so going to the hairdresser, I might be worried also of the love I won't receive, say, from a sort of a longtime friend that I haven't seen, or at least not a friend, but definitely an acquaintance. And that's maybe why I would want to try to eat, just to fill the void, essentially.
So there's some, okay, so you see what happens when you get curious instead of critical? You are more likely to find the answer. So what seems to be some anxiety about going to get your hair cut is really an anxiety about connecting with another person. And you mentioned that you're afraid your friend will, or your friend will be embarrassed. Did you ever feel that your parents were embarrassed of you, or, you know, when that someone else was embarrassed by you?
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that I might've been embarrassed by my parents. Is that
okay? Say more. Yeah. Say more.
I mean, no reason to be embarrassed. I mean, by your parents, unless, I mean, generally the kids are the ones who are misbehaving, not the parents. So it would be strange that I would be embarrassed by my parents, unless I was like a little genius baby who was just perfect. Do you know what I mean? It seems a bit strange, but I just said it, so it might be part of this. And then all of a sudden now I'm projecting it or something like that.
Maybe. And by the way, it is not strange at all for kids to be embarrassed by their parents. Kids are always embarrassed by their parents. Last year when kids were still in school. So I have a BMW, i3. So it's a funky looking car. And my daughter was like, please drop me off and go away quickly, because I don't want anyone to see me getting out of this car. It's so ugly and embarrassing. So, like, I had to I had to like stealthily drop her off at school lest anyone see her get out of my car. And yes, kids get embarrassed. Kids get embarrassed of their parents in all kinds of ways. So
now, when you got in, can I ask you a question? When you got embarrassed, did you feel as though you were?
How did you
feel in relation to your daughter? Did you feel like you were culpable?
No. She got embarrassed. I wasn't embarrassed. She was embarrassed.
Okay. But did you feel as though she was culpable or you were culpable?
There's no culpability. Embarrassment, it doesn't mean anyone is culpable. So let's just go back to you and your anxiety, which seems to be less about getting your hair cut and more about some kind of social anxiety, some kind of social interaction.
Yeah. I feel like the anxiety surrounding just not knowing, you know, I mean, but that's what anxiety is, right? We worry too much. We're excessively worrying. Of course there's some, I mean, I was nervous to call you today. And now that I'm talking to you, I feel like the nervousness is gone. So hopefully that's how it will be tomorrow. But I just know myself so well that I have a tendency just to shut down and cancel the appointment. And I know I was like, you better, you know, hopefully you don't do that. So,
there's that second person voice. You better, hopefully you don't do that. Instead of, I've got this. I'm going to go and I'm going to walk there and I'm going to remind myself that what is, not what if. So here's the way you deal with anxiety. You have that which you know to be true instead of going to what if, which is fear. So your fear is sort of nebulous. You can't even really pin it down. It's something about embarrassment or something about something you're not really even sure. But what is, let's stay with what is. What do you know to be true? Yeah. How has this friend interacted with you in the past?
Well, something just came to mind, which is if we relate it to food, food is something I can control. So I can put the food into my mouth and I'm happy. Whereas I can't control another person. So this person might be food to me, but I can't control. Does that make sense?
Yes, but why do you need to control? So you keep going back to food, and yes, you're right. You could control food and you might not be able to control the person, but what is it that you would be controlling the person? Like, what is it that is going to happen? You see what I mean? Anxiety. Yeah. What is it?
Yeah, I think just having a nice experience. Like, you know, I wouldn't want to go, like you went to this doctor's appointment and you didn't like the feeling of that. Like, thank God I know what I'm, thank God at least I know who is eventually going to be cutting my hair. But it's an aspect of just not knowing what's going to happen. And the only reason why I relate it to food is because, you know, food is the easy, you know, it's not as if, you know, food is the option that I would take maybe, but it certainly can't be the option. Go ahead.
Stay with what, so your mind keeps going to food and now you're explaining why you go to food, which absolutely, but we know that. So instead, I want to help you. I want to help you out. I want to help you feel less anxious. What is reality and that which you know to be true. So list everything that you know to be true with regard to this situation. You've been to this place before and how did it go?
It went fine. It's just that I've never gone to her there. It's a place I've gone to before. This is like maybe years and years ago I went there. And then she just started working there. And she's my normal hair cutter. So it's kind of a confluence of things. It's her first time there. I've been there before. I haven't seen her since before the pandemic. She just got this new great job because it's a great place. It's the best place in where I live. I won't say the name, but I don't want to say too much on here. I'm going to have to tell her I talked to you.
I know okay, now
I'm going to say I talked to someone about. Go ahead.
Her. What about your relationship with her? How do you feel with her? What do you know to be true? What does she think
she's
of you?
She's kind of like a therapist. I've told her this, you know, because I just talk for like an hour straight, and it's good for me in that way, you know, kind of just talk and talk and talk.
She likes you? You feel like she likes you?
Yeah, I feel like we have a good relationship.
That's what you know to be true. So you have a good relationship. She likes you. How is being in a different place going to change that? It's not. What else do you know to be true? How long have you known her?
Well, she's probably been cutting my hair for at least a few years.
What if is anxiety? What is she's been cutting your hair for a few years. She's like a therapist to you. She likes you. You feel comfortable with her. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to get a haircut that's a very strange style. Like I'm trying to get, my hair is so long that I want to get a style that's reminiscent of like the 1970s kind of mullet haircut, which is actually very in style. So there's anxiety about that too. You know, the whole thing is just, there's a lot of factors.
Okay, so then you want to apply the what if versus what is. So you want to look at, well, with your haircut, the style that you want to get, are you afraid of judgment? Are you afraid it's not going to look good? What exactly is the anxiety? And then stay with what you know to be true. And
yeah,
how's your anxiety now that we've...
Go ahead.
How's your anxiety now that we've just done a little bit of this what if versus what is?
I feel like since I've opened myself up to you, I'm feeling that anxiety with you. Whereas 5 minutes ago, I was not feeling any anxiety. So the anxiety of the haircut is now starting to come into our conversation. I'm feeling it.
Okay, so you're feeling it and but it's about not feeling secure about the haircut choice. It's about not feeling safe in your relationship with your hairdresser, afraid you're going to embarrass her.
I feel like it could go horribly wrong. I feel like it could go horribly wrong. I could look terrible. And I could embarrass myself for even wanting to like cut my hair that way or whatever. I feel like it could go horribly, horribly wrong, to be honest.
And it could. It could. And then what? And then what?
Yeah.
Let's say you
and then maybe I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
What?
Maybe she wouldn't want to see me again and I wouldn't want to see her. I'm very sensitive about that. Like I told you yesterday, my response to a rude doctor's assistant is to sort of like run away and hide. You know?
So you think that if something happens that's uncomfortable or weird, that someone won't like you anymore and that you won't like that person, which is why this feels so loaded.
Yeah. And I don't think I'm making it up that it has something to do with food.
Food is the solution, right? Food is, when you're talking about food, it resolves this. It makes it better. You don't think about this. It's a lot easier to think about what you're eating and why you, and then it is to think about, oh, What if my hairdresser doesn't like me? What if she doesn't like me? What if I don't like her? That's really intense and loaded. But so that's why you're having this intense feeling. It's easier to say, oh, I ate this or I want to eat this, than it is to say, oh, I'm afraid that my connections with someone are so fragile.
Yeah. And I'm not helping myself, Dr. Nina. I'm probably making it worse. I know I'm making it worse. I have to be.
Well, you are helping yourself because we're on this call and we're talking about reminding yourself about, you know, what is, which is that not all relationships are so fragile. If you don't like the way she cuts your hair, are you going to say, off with your head? You know, I'm done with you.
Yeah, maybe she's afraid that I'm going to be mean to her, you know? So maybe I should just, you know, maybe I should put the relationship first and let everything flow from that. In other words, we'll talk about this. She'll greet me, you know, after I check in, you know, at this nice hair salon. And I usually just go with the flow and let the relationship dictate it, but I also want to be sort of also, you know, not selfish, but I want to be, I don't even know what the word is, but I want to allow myself to ask for what I want too, which maybe I'm not so good at.
Yeah. So going there and remembering that you can have a connection with someone that they're not going to, that is solid. It's 3 years of having her do your hair. If it doesn't work out with the mullet, she'll just cut it and make it a different style. And that your relationship and connection with other people is not so fragile, that people can be upset without cutting off from other people. You can be upset without cutting off from her. She can be upset, not that she'll have anything to be upset about, without cutting off from you. So that's when I say, remember what is. Three years, or you said a few years, some years of connection. It seems to be that she listens to you. She likes you. She gives advice. Trust that. Okay. Think about that. That's what is. Think about that when you're there, and that will help you not want to soothe with food. And let me know how it goes.
I will. I will let you know next week. It's tomorrow afternoon. And yeah, I just feel like it probably has to go back to childhood with a meal from the parents, and having that be something that I replaced unknowingly and that has haunted me to this day. And that because it's not a meal and I don't have control over it, it's super out of control, which obviously it's just a normal human interaction, societal interaction. But
it is.
But yeah.
But you know, that's logical, but there's what's logical and what's psychological. And if you're feeling anxious and unnerved, just stay with what you know to be true, the facts. And that's going to help you. That's going to help you feel a lot calmer. And that's going to be much more calming than any kind of food you're going to take, because it's addressing the way you're thinking and not just calming your body. So you got this, Josh. You can do it.
Yeah, I will. And I think what I might do is it might wait an hour or so before I eat, because since I'm feeling it with you, eating might not be the best thing to do immediately after hanging up with you.
I think that sounds like a good idea. Stay with you. You're able to be with yourself, which is a good thing. Be with you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
You are welcome, Josh. I look forward to the update next week.
Yes, and I'll just say I had to talk to my therapist on a live show so I could actually get this haircut from you, which should be an interesting conversation.
Well, and
anyway,
I should just say that you, I am not, in fact, your therapist, right? I'm like, we've never met, and this is not, you know, this is you calling. I don't know who you are other than our connection online, just because there are like legalities involved and confidentiality. But I am very glad that you're calling, and I'm glad that I was able to help you, and I look forward to your update next week.
Okay.
Good luck tomorrow.
Appreciate it. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You know, if there's something going on, and I feel for Josh, you know, I hear the anxiety in his voice and just not really understanding why, him not even understanding his anxiety. But as we talked, you could see his anxiety was not about getting a haircut. His anxiety was about putting himself out there, being with somebody, you know, that he hadn't been with for a while, asking for a new haircut, not knowing, having uncertainty, not knowing how things were going to go. And this is the source of the anxiety. Food is a solution to the anxiety, but of course it is a temporary solution. So my word diet, fat, eliminate the word fat from your vocabulary, because fat talk just makes you feel bad about yourself. It just does. There's just no other way around it. It makes you feel bad about yourself. And it keeps you turning on yourself, it distracts you from others. I just want to read this from J.K. Rowling, creator of Harry Potter. She once wrote, "Fat is usually the first insult a girl throws at another girl when she wants to hurt her." I mean, is fat really the worst thing a human being can be? Is fat worse than vindictive, jealous, shallow, vain, boring, or cruel? Not to me. But then you might retort, what do I know about the pressure to be skinny? I'm not in the business of being judged on my looks, what with being a writer and earning my living by using my brain. And she goes on to tell the story of how she went to the British Book Awards, and she bumped into a woman she hadn't seen in a few years. And the woman said, "Oh, you've lost a lot of weight since the last time I saw you." Those were the first words out of this woman's mouth. And the last time they saw each other, JK had just had a baby. And she said, "What I felt like saying was, I've produced my third child and my sixth novel since I last saw you. Aren't either of those things more important, more interesting than my size? But no, my waist looks smaller. Forget the kid and the books. Finally, something to celebrate." Yes. You know, the way you talk about yourself, the way you talk about your body affects the way you feel. So do not call yourself names. Drop the fat talk. The second in the word diet is can't. Whether you think you can or you think you can, you're right. And when you say, "I can do something," that makes you optimistic and hopeful. You feel good. But when you put a can't, a not on can and make it a contraction, I can't do that. I can't eat that. I can't lose weight. I can't stay on my eating plan. You're setting yourself up to feel depressed and hopeless. So eliminate the word can't from your vocabulary. Unless it's something like, "I can't be mean to myself because I don't deserve it." And remember, you've got this. You can create change. You can do this. Just a couple more of my word diet. Normal, the N word. Normal, unless you're talking about the fact that it's a setting on the dryer, the word normal never makes people feel good. They just feel abnormal. What is normal? I don't know what normal is. I really don't. So just try not to get so caught up in words like normal that really don't have any meaning, because what's normal in one society is not normal in other societies. And when you feel like you're not normal because you're comparing yourself to other people, then what happens? You feel bad. And what happens when you feel bad? One way to feel better is to eat. Eat for comfort, eat for distraction. So we want to eliminate the root issues, the root causes, the root vocabulary in this case, that causes you to turn to food in the first place. And the way that you talk to yourself and about yourself is crucial. When you change literally the vocabulary you use, you're going to feel differently. You're going to feel better. Another word that I recommend eliminating from your vocabulary is the word ridiculous. The word ridiculous means deserving or inviting derision or mockery, absurd. Oh, Josh is saying, I feel like thinking of becoming enlightened is good. Yes. And thinking of becoming enlightened is very good. Much better than some of the more caustic comments you might have been saying to yourself. So the notion of what is ridiculous can be subjective. Ridiculous is usually used just as a put down. And in the book, I share about how one of my patients told her dad that she had really liked this movie. And he said, she told him she disliked this movie that he liked. And he said, don't be ridiculous. It's a great movie. In other words, your reactions, your thoughts, your feelings, your individuality is ridiculous to him. And then she just felt bad. So expressing what you think or feel is never ridiculous. It's just your thoughts. It's just your feelings. Feelings are reactions to situations, and you have a right to your thoughts. You have a right to your feelings. You don't have to earn them. They just simply are. But when we're made to feel ridiculous by other people, we tend to bury our emotions. And one way of burying emotions, of course, is to turn to food. If you just honor your emotions, if you honor your thoughts, if you honor yourself, you feel fine. And when you feel fine, you don't need food to cope. Oh, then there's the word should. Don't should on yourself. Should just, update on Josh. He says, my haircut is going to be a feminine style. I'm going to ask for a shag. Well, Josh, you can think of that as feminine, or you can also think of that as kind of unisex. Isn't a shag, based on my knowledge of 70s hairstyles, I'm thinking, isn't it sort of a unisex hairstyle that people of both genders can wear? But so that might be a little bit of a reframe that can help. Or you're getting in touch with what some guys call their feminine side. I just call their human side. All right, so I have more, but we're out of time. I know you've heard me talk about this a lot. It's also all available in my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, where I talk about the word diet and much, 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 much more. Remember, if you are turning to food, you are turning away from something else. If you are anxious, yes, eating is one way of dealing with it. If you are mad, sad, afraid, any kind of uncomfortable feeling, yes, food is one way of dealing with it, but it is a temporary way and it doesn't help in the long run. But when you can learn to reassure yourself, when you can stay with what is instead of what if, that anxiety is going to diminish. So Josh and anyone who can relate, stay with, when you feel anxious, stay with what you know to be true, what is reality and what you know to be true, rather than let your mind go to all kinds of scary places of what if. What if is fear. What is reality, and reality nullifies and neutralizes fear. And that is our show for today. Thank you, Josh, for calling. Thank you for the questions on Instagram, and thank you all for joining me here today on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am here every week at 11 a.m. Pacific Live, or you can listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get your podcasts. Please take care of yourself this week, and remember to be curious, not critical. Curiosity makes you think about why you're doing something. Critical makes you feel bad. When you have answers and you figure out the why, you can respond. When you feel bad, well, we know where that goes. And by the way, I also invite you to join me on Facebook in my Food for Thought community. Please go to Facebook, do a search for Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community. There are men there as well as women, and you can reach and connect with other people who struggle with the same things. You can reach me and connect with me there, and I would love to see you there. So go ahead and do that now, and have a beautiful day. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.